This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 245 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode is part of our Drums of Autumn read-along. To find out more and how to participate, visit outlanderpod.com/DOA.
If you've tried or you're trying online dating, chances are you've run into lazy text messages, dead-end conversations, or random matches that don't turn into dates.
But have you seen the success stories from eHarmony? Real people finding real matches with eHarmony. Lisa and Mark say, "We never thought we'd meet somebody online that was so compatible, and we are so grateful that we were able to find each other." And Bruce and Lori say, "Don't settle for anything less, and you too will meet the one that will complete your life."
So I don't know if any of you listeners have experienced eHarmony in the past, but I know that when I was online dating, I was a little discouraged by eHarmony because their profile, while very in-depth, was very long. And it took a very interested person and very dedicated person to make it through their profile. They've streamlined their questionnaire from like thousands of questions down to some core ones. So it's a much quicker setup process. And you don't have to sift through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who you may have nothing in common with. They will only show you to your matched people.
eHarmony uses decades of science, data, and psychological research to send you the right matches. They have helped over a million people find their perfect match.
eHarmony brings compatible people together. And right now, our listeners can get a free month with eHarmony when they sign up for a three-month subscription. Enter our code OUTLANDER at checkout.
Stop waiting and start your journey to a satisfying, meaningful relationship. It can be fun to play around with the online dating apps, but when you're ready to fall in love with someone and have a meaningful relationship, there's one app that's built to bring you real love. eHarmony.
Come see how eHarmony can change your life. Go to eHarmony.com and get started. Enter our code OUTLANDER at checkout. And now on to our read-along. This week, we'll be discussing chapters 26 and 27, so let's get started with chapter 26, entitled Plague and Pestilence. I wonder what happens in this chapter.
The patient in the corn crib has not improved, nor has he worsened. He's still lying there holding the amulet, and it made me think, if he were in a modern hospital and not getting up, would they do the bedpan thing, or would they have him have a catheter in him?
A modern, like nowadays?
Yes.
Oh, they would totally catheter him.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Nobody's got a way to change a bedpan for somebody. Gonna go out and they can get away with catheterizing.
Well, we'd have to ask a nurse that, but I wonder if there's like levels of care or standards. Like if someone's not, well, if they're unconscious, obviously you catheterize them, but he's not unconscious, but he's weak and not really moving. So I think he'd probably would be up there in the same category. I'm wondering about number two. I know that's gross, but how do you just like...
If he's not intaking solids,
he's not going to poop.
Exporting solids.
Oh, well, at least Claire doesn't have to deal with that. Erica B. writes, "I feel bad for the fellow in the corn crib to be so very ill from something that folks can easily live through." Well, maybe today. I don't know about easily living through, because some died. Even today, people would die if they got it.
Well, I mean, that's why we have vaccinations.
Well, yeah, and we have antibiotics now too, but yeah. She continues, kind of like the flu right now, which is crazy to me. Well, I would say, that might be a fair thing, because we're not talking vaccines, right? We're just talking treatable. Because the flu vaccine is a lot different than, say, a measles vaccine. They're both contested. I get it. But again, she's not talking about the vaccine efficacy. She's talking about the disease itself and how it doesn't seem, because it does. His symptoms, he may have the measles, but his symptoms are kind of flu-like, right? High fever, upper respiratory distress, and weakness, lethargy, not eating, all that kind of stuff. And probably soreness. Now, he is still able to swallow Claire's concoction, and he lets her know by modeling that he wants her to hum or at least do some kind of audible treatment. So she settles on Onward Christian Soldiers, which he seems to like. She returns to the house, rinsing her hands with alcohol. She has had the measles, but doesn't want to infect the others. Lord John lets them know that there was talk of a measles outbreak in Cross Creek, and then he asks if the indigenous are less able to withstand infection than the Europeans. And he asks if it's true that Africans are even more hardy than the Europeans. She shares that it depends on the illness. Indigenous are more resistant to parasitic diseases. Africans seem to deal better with tropical diseases, but the indigenous don't have much immunity to the European illnesses like smallpox and syphilis. This engages Lord John, who then asks her if she subscribes to Evan Hunter's theory of miasmatical creatures. And she changes the subject because that's a little bit close to germ theory. I Googled that, and miasmatical didn't come up, but miasma, that came up. But I didn't find an Evan Hunter. It doesn't mean he doesn't exist. I just couldn't find him in conjunction with my search on miasmatical or miasma. Martina P. writes, I must say that I do enjoy the slight tension between Lord John Grey and Claire. It's like a delicate dance between the two of getting to know one another. Lord John seems surprised of Claire's vast medical knowledge when he asks questions about diseases. He should be familiar with her abilities when she treated all the ill seamen on the Man of War. Maybe he was more impressed than surprised.
You cannot say seamen without it really making me giggle like a 13-year-old boy.
So they hang. Jamie and Lord John are talking. Willie and Ian are playing chess. Claire's darning socks. Young Ian and Willie go share a pallet in the herb shed, and Claire goes to bed while Jamie and Lord John play chess. And this is all, when it's bedtime, this is how it kind of, not shuttles out, but levels out, shakes down. That's how it all shakes down, the sleeping arrangements. Erica B. writes, do we know how they came to have a chess table? Either way, it's good they have it now, so to entertain company and themselves. Funny, though, the significant time difference between Claire and Jamie game versus Lord John and Jamie game. So she says that Jamie can beat her in like 20 minutes flat, easily. And I thought she meant like how long between the games. Lord John asks if, oh, to answer your question, and I normally wouldn't know this, but it's only because we've done this read along recently. Jamie actually carved the chess table. He made it. And that's from a few, it's probably when they first got to the, I don't know if it was before they built the cabin, but it's in the last like 10 chapters we find out. Lord John asks if they haven't seen anything political up in the hills. Do they hear of much? And then they try to poison Lord John by giving him alcohol, not quite whiskey. Jamie made it. He's developing whiskey, but it takes about 10 years. Now he says he plans to trade with it. He does plan to include the indigenous in this, but only in very small amounts as far as how much of the whiskey, how much alcohol he would be trading with the indigenous. There have been battles that have been partially due to drink. So he knows... battles meaning between indigenous, between natives and settlers. So yeah, people there know how dangerous or how much alcohol can affect the natives and thus make them, you know, not in their right mind or make them influenced to, and how that can be, you know, dangerous for anyone who drinks too much or more than their body can handle. And then Lord John brings up the regulators in Wilmington who, quote, terrorized the backcountry and caused disruption by means of riot, unquote. Jamie's reaction? He snorts. Terrorize what? Squirrels? There is backcountry, John, and then there's wilderness. Lord John also mentions that he's heard rumors regarding their presence there, that it, quote, it was in part meant as a quelling influence upon the growth of lawlessness, unquote. So, of course, what he's talking about, not necessarily where he heard it from, although it wouldn't surprise me if a certain gov had something to do with it. But what he's referring to is, even if people don't know the exact, you know, contract between them, it may be a rumor, but it's actually a true rumor, because some rumors, you know, rumors can be true. Governor Tryon may not have said to him straight to his face, having you there will help settle things, will have a calming influence necessary. He may not have said that to him. But people who know that Jamie has a contract from the governor and, you know, thus has maybe not the ear of the governor, but has contacted the governor, you know, someone who's very high up, doesn't mean, it doesn't guarantee anything, but they might pause before, you know, at least either telling Jamie something or getting involved in something that is near him, you know, near his territory.
Yeah. And it's also like having another, you know, it's just spreading out his influence.
The main part of that bargain, of course, was that Jamie gets the land, and him and his family and his friends and his kinsmen and anyone whom he can settle and who can take care of the land benefit from that. The payback is if and when their help in a war or in fighting or in defense of the crown is needed. He has to not only do it himself, he has to find men. So it's a big ask. It's a big bounty, but a big ask. So yeah. Erica B. writes, here we have the first mention of the regulators. We don't know about much about them as of yet. Google found this link, and we'll share that in the show notes. It's from University of North Carolina. That is a paper that talks about the regulators movement and briefly summarizes it. As regulators were a large group of North Carolina colonists who opposed the taxation and fee system imposed by the colonial officials in the late 1760s. This political argument led to a battle between the colonial militia and the regulators in 1771. Remember, Claire's gone to bed. Jamie and Lord John are playing chess. Claire, not able to sleep, is feeling jealous, and she knows that it's really not, there's nothing to be jealous of, but she feels jealous. She recognizes that part of it was Willie, and it gutted her to see Jamie's reaction to his son. Quote, he would never look at Brianna, his firstborn, that way. Would never see her at all. That was hardly his fault, and yet it seemed so unfair. But she still doesn't know the real reason Lord John is there. She doesn't trust that it was solely to come see the Virginia plantation of Isabel. Then she realizes, she kind of recognizes, because she was like, she didn't know that she had felt it before, but she couldn't put her finger on what exactly it was that she was feeling, besides a little bit of jealousy. But then she realizes that she had similar feelings before. She likens it to what she felt internally when she was with Frank after she came back through the stones. When he came home late, she could be cold to him. When he came to bed, she could challenge him, demand from him, quote, urging him wordlessly to deny it to prove his innocence with his body, unquote. And of course, she means innocence or guilt as far as being with other women. She had no right to complain. So she coming back, although when she fell through the stones, it was not her fault, right? It definitely wasn't Frank's fault, but it wasn't her fault. And then when she came back to him, she came back to a mom. She didn't want to. She wanted to stay, but Jamie sent her back. So she goes back to the stones and comes back to Frank. And even though it was not malicious, Frank is truly the one who was wronged as far as losing his wife coming back pregnant by another man. I mean, that you can't blame Frank for at all. However, so she couldn't complain about this situation. I mean, well, you could, but I'm not going to go there. So if he's cheating, right? She's like, well, he's got, I can't complain. Like, I kind of did the same thing. It was completely not my fault and all the things, but whatever. She felt like she had no right to complain. But his right was revenge. She says, Diana writes, I had nothing to say. I had no right to complain. I had no like defense. He, however, had revenge. Quote, I knew it didn't matter who it was. There were several of them. The only important thing was that she was not me. And I would lie awake and clench my fists, the marks of my nails, a small crucifixion. So the way we can relate that to her in bed right now with Lord John and Jamie playing chess is that it didn't matter. Even though Jamie felt nothing, she knew, like she had huge suspicion, and there's still a lot of, not talking about the show, I'm talking about the book. There's still a lot of, you know, there's two sides to the Frank cheat thing, right? At least people say that. Diana says the stuff. In the book, she believes he did, right? So regardless of what we think, she believes he did. So it didn't matter who it was and really how many. And she says this. It only mattered that it wasn't her. So even though she knows Jamie is not having anything with Lord John, it's never going to happen. This don't go in that. Not going to happen.
Physically, it could. It just
I mean, it could.
I don't think that's the trajectory of this story.
It's not going to happen. Jamie offered it and he turned it down, and he did it, I think, rightly. But yeah, not going to happen.
Yeah, but that was a one time only kind of a
offer.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's, my point is she has nothing to worry about here. However, because there's someone else, it doesn't matter that Jamie may not, it doesn't matter that Jamie has like no feelings for him in that way. What matters is that there's someone who has feelings for him, and it's not her, or is an addition to her. And it's also that even though they're friends, you know, Claire doesn't have a, I mean, at this moment in the book, right? We don't get a lot of female friendships with Claire. She had one at one time with Jenny, but she doesn't have a lot of female friendships. She has more friendships with males.
Well, they're also in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly.
And she's now having to split Jamie's attention between she loves Ian, don't get me wrong, but not only is she sharing Jamie with Ian, she's now sharing Jamie with his son and Lord John. So she's getting, instead of getting half of Jamie's time, she's getting like a fourth of Jamie's time.
Yeah. And so without the extras there, it's Jamie and Ian, and now it's Jamie, Ian, John, and Willie. I mean, come on. Willie like icing on the cake, or takes the cake. They're like, wow. So it's not just that the thing I said about, you know, someone else feeling incredibly attracted and in love with her husband. There's that. But there's also the fact that she may have jealousy, but there's no danger there, right? There's no danger that Jamie's going to like take off with him or do anything.
It's not reciprocated.
Well, exactly. What there is, not a danger of, but what is reciprocated is a very strong, deep emotional friendship that encountered things that do not include her, never included her, and never can include her. Now they can share stuff, and she can, you know, be there to support him and understand, but there, it's just, that's hard for her, right? The fact that these things, number one, not only that they didn't include her, but the fact that she missed 20 years of the love of her life. And this man who shared, you know, a decent amount, maybe half, maybe not quite half of that, at least on and off, they have a history. Now, of course, Claire has a more deep history, a deeper history with Jamie, obviously. But it's not just that someone loves her husband. It's the fact that while her husband may not reciprocate those feelings, they do have a mutual friendship, and that is completely reciprocated. And what makes it even harder is that this person gets to be the father of Jamie's child. And so that's not a threat, but that's a similarity, because Claire brought up the daughter he'll never see. And with very few exceptions, well, although he saw him a lot for the first 5 or 6 years of his life, but with very few exceptions since that time, John is bringing up the son that Jamie will hardly ever or never see. So John and Claire are very parallel characters in Jamie's life. It's very interesting. And so Claire has a lot, she's got a lot of baggage. I think they all have baggage, but it's a very interesting little kind of triangle there. And I love the way, Diana's the part about the marks of my nails, a small crucifixion. Well, she is later on, as she's turning over, right? She's kind of restless. She can't sleep, but she's listening to their conversation. She does that again. So she talks about when she was in bed waiting for Frank, whether she was waiting for him or he had come home and she was ignoring him, whatever it was at the time with Frank, she would dig her nails into her hands or clench her fists as she lay awake. And she does the exact same thing here in the bed with Jamie and Lord John playing chess. Martina P. writes, Claire is plagued by irrational jealousy of Lord John Grey. In my mind, she is jealous of their closeness and all the time he shared with Jamie while she was away. At the same time, she grudgingly gives him credit for being a polite, courteous man with seemingly no ulterior motives. She begins to realize that Lord John is a very good and loyal friend to Jamie. When it comes to Willie, Claire seems to be torn between a slight jealousy and motherly concern for the boy. Willie painfully reminds Claire of her own daughter, who is also so much like Jamie and so out of reach and hidden away in time, untouchable to Jamie and never able to lay eyes on his firstborn child. She does not want to begrudge Jamie the joy of seeing his son. She could detect the pride in Jamie's face at unguarded moments. Claire's motherly concern eventually outweighs the emotion of jealousy for Willie. Martina continues, I don't quite understand how this situation conjured memories of Frank and his infidelities in Boston. Jamie clearly states in the conversation that he is happy with his life and having his wife by his side. I don't understand why Claire has to dig her nails into her hands and think of Frank. Well, I kind of preluded all of that. So refer to what I said earlier. But yeah, I kind of jumped that gun, or, you know, I beat you to your comment order-wise. But yeah, I think I pretty much discussed that. Erica B. writes, the jealousy Claire holds toward Lord John is pretty intense and bothers her a great deal, in part because it is reminiscent of her time spent with Frank, assuming but not really knowing what he was doing all those late nights out. Okay. The next morning, young Ian wakes Claire up. The patient in the corn crib is worse. She demands that Ian take Willie away because she goes in and Willie is kind of at the door. Ian tells her he thinks she shouldn't, quote, regarding the patient, she thinks he shouldn't torment him with medicine. Quote, he's fixed to die, Auntie. We heard an owl in the night. He will have heard it too. It's a sign of death to them, unquote. He says that the indigenous sing to a person as they're dying. Quote, the shaman puts paint on her face and sings the soul away to safety so the demons didn't take it. Unquote. While she's thinking about what to do, young Ian scrapes up earth and spits it in his hand and makes it into mud. He draws a line of it down her face and cheeks. He encourages her to go over to the patient and to sing something like Tantum Ergo. She begins. The man relaxes. As she keeps vigil over him, she remarks that of all the deaths she's seen, she'd seen nothing like this. Quote, he simply waited, eyes on mine, until I had come to the end of the song. Then he turned his face toward the door, and as the rising sun struck him, he left his body without the twitch of a muscle or the drawing of a final breath. Unquote.
He's like, could you just sing me the damn song?
He was, oh, dude. He was waiting, dude. Yeah.
I have been sitting here all night. I heard the owl. He heard the owl. We all heard the owl. Would you please just sing the damn song? Would the fat lady please sing?
Huh. Erica B. writes, anyone else find odd that Ian knows so much about the Tuscaroran?
No.
About the Tuscarora between the language and rituals? I find it fascinating yet odd.
Well, this one, he's not Tuscarora, is he? He was just hunting with them.
This one, no. But she doesn't mean about the patient's tribe. She means that the rituals in general. Because that's all, I think that's the main tribe that, because his native friends are the Tuscaroras. So what to do with the body? Lord John and Willie go to pick berries. Of course, that's to get Willie out of the way. Young Ian doesn't know much about how they handle their dead. The one ceremony he saw, they put him on a platform above the ground and left the body there to dry. But they can't take the body anywhere because it is still infectious. Jamie has had measles, young Ian hasn't. And the patient isn't from Anauka. And if they bury him and people learn about it, they may think that they're trying to hide something, like how they killed him. Jamie decides that they'll wrap him up and put him in a cave above the house, one that he's planning to use as a stable in the future. I just gotta say, like, how convenient. Like, this little place that, I mean, I know, I get it. It's like, in a movie, you'd say it's Hollywood, or in TV, you'd say it's Hollywood magic. Yeah, well, this is a book. So it's Diana, right? Number one, it's fiction. You do whatever you want. It is magic. You need this? Well, funny. It's right over there. But I mean, that's a little bit, come on. Just then, Willie appears because he and Remember, Willie and Lord John had gone to pick, what did I say, pick berries? Apparently, Lord John has taken ill, like literally in the last few minutes or, you know, since they've gone to pick those berries. And Claire is thinking, oh my gosh, he's got the measles. His measles can't be from the corn crop man's measles. The incubation period is 1 to 2 weeks. Young Ian takes Willie out, and Claire confirms once she sees Lord John, she confirms her diagnosis by the whitish spots lining the inside of his mouth. She says, put the sickie outside. She says Jamie should camp outside with the boys that night. And then the plan was to take Willie away with him to the Anauka and let them know about the other indigenous man, about their friend. And Jamie is worried that Willie might notice being alone with him, having concentrated time together, might notice their shared features if they spend too much time alone together. She assures him that if he hasn't noticed it yet, he won't notice it now. Just please, she says, before you leave, get the pig out of the pantry.
No kidding. Does it happen? I don't think it happens. Doesn't the pig just live in the pantry and underneath the house forever?
The pantry is a little bit different than under the house. Unless it's a secret, not hobble, we call it like a secret tunnel or something.
Pig would probably make one. It could be like a cold, what do they call this? A cold cellar or a
root cellar?
A larder.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. And that was chapter 26. And now moving on to chapter 27 entitled Trout Fishing in America.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to spoil anything because there's a character. It involves only the situation involves two characters, one of which has, do we know of yet. And so I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's something in book 8 that, first of all, I don't like fish, so it's not really a thing, not really an issue, but yeah, it makes me think about trout in a whole new way. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not going to think too hard about it.
I'll tell you later. Lisa T. writes, Trout Fishing in America. The title of the chapter comes from a novella by Richard Brautigan. According to Wikipedia, it is an abstract book. Or abstract book? Abstract. But what is relevant to this chapter is DOA is that he wrote most books of it while on a camping trip with his wife and child. The trout is symbolic of hope, love, and community. Herself, Diana, writes about trout and trout fishing throughout her series. Okay, and they're off. Jamie and Willie's journey begins with rain and with Willie punching his dad, not dad. He doesn't want to go with him. Jamie punches him in the stomach, and yes, he can make him go. He's like, you can make me. Yeah, I can. They ride together and not on the same horse, but they ride their horses together. And Jamie is keeping an eye on Willie and his state of health because the whole purpose, of course, is to keep him safe and healthy away from the sickos. Sorry, the sickies.
And the sickos.
There's a difference, right?
I mean, I think he would want to keep them clear of both, to be honest.
That's true. That's true. Oh, gosh. That's funny, though.
No, nobody ever just picks one out of that. Oh, no. The sickos are fine. It's the sickies that she can't go near.
So Claire had told him to keep Willie away for at least 6 days so that Lord John would no longer be contagious. Now, as they speak, Jamie takes pleasure in not addressing Willie as my lord. Mm. It's when he's being a testy little
prick.
Arse. The prick is perfect. Yeah, that's good. Lisa T. writes, I love the way the chapter begins with a dual parallel to Outlander and Voyager with Jamie and Willie arguing. Quote, I ken well what you said, but what I said is that you're coming with me. Unquote. This is ironic in terms of Voyager because the last time Willie saw Jamie, he didn't want Jamie to leave and he wanted to go with him and they had an argument about it. In terms of Outlander, Jamie used the same words after he meets Claire and she is trying to get back to the stones. Jamie lets it slip that he'd lived in England and Willie catches this, but he goes on. He thinks, what should happen to Willie if Lord John should die? Not only did he want Lord John to get well for his own sake, like he didn't want his friend to die because he would lose a friend, but also for Willie's sake and selfishly for his Willie's sake. So Willie wouldn't lose a father, obviously, and also the only father he ever knew, but also so that, understandably, somewhat selfishly, so that Jamie himself didn't lose his only connection with his son. Jamie takes this time together to teach his son about the environment. And I don't mean being a peaceful environmentalist. I mean about the trees and the grass and bears and animal markings and about their immediate environment, about the forest, about nature. He points out animal markings, bear scratches on trees. And as the rain stops, they see a rainbow in the distance. And Willie is amazed. He was like, "Isn't that the most amazing thing?" Jamie just thinks that he hopes that on this, perhaps the last time he'll ever spend with his son, he doesn't have to hit him again. He hopes.
I mean, I have lots of hopes. I would hope that he doesn't catch the measles and I might lose him completely. Or I hope that we don't come across a bear, that I don't have a fish to hit him in the face with. Or I hope we don't run into some non-friendly Indians in the forest while we're traipsing around. I mean, there's any number of things that could happen for him to hope don't happen.
At night, he hears the sound of Willie weeping, or what he thinks is him like trying to control himself about and not cry. Worried, and he thinks like, well, I'm going to leave him alone because he's a growing young man and he's trying to be stoic, but also, you know, not act like a child. There's nothing wrong with expressing yourself, but he wants to respect that the boy doesn't want to be heard. So, but it goes on long enough that he then thinks like, oh gosh, if he's actually in real pain, or maybe he's like feeling some symptoms of something, you know, he might have the measles. Oh my gosh. And then if that's the case, we have to get back to Claire immediately. He's like, no, okay, I got to ask him. So he asks him if he was okay. He asks, does the Earl, or my lord, however he refers to him, he asks if the Earl has cramp. Jimmy very graciously gives Willie an out. So Willie can claim that and say, yes, I think something may not have agreed with me. So he says that he has some tea. He calls it a potion, and so do I. A potion from an herbal potion given to him by Claire. He goes away to get water for it to boil, thus giving Willie some time alone to compose himself. Now, Claire had given him the herbs for the potion, and he had, quote, long passed the point of questioning anything she did in the way of healing, whether of heart or body. Lisa T. writes, in another parallel to Outlander, Jamie wakes to hear Willie weeping with grief in the wood. He wants to comfort him just as he wanted to comfort Claire in Outlander. Jamie can't comfort him as a father, so he does the next best thing and brews Willie one of Claire's teas. We also get Jamie's internal dialogue about how he recognizes Claire's struggle with Willie, having him there, being reminded that he had shared another's bed. Her reaction to Leary had been different, and understandably so. Different from her reaction to finding out about Geneva, of course. He understands why Claire's reaction to him being with Leary would have been a lot different. Number one, she was still alive, so she could be confronted by her. But number two, Leary, I mean, she had gotten married. No, the biggest thing was, and at that point, he didn't know. The biggest thing was that Leary had tried to have Claire arrested and killed. So there was that. There's a history. There's no history with Geneva. But he believes that the reason she took it so well was not only on behalf of Willie, but the fact that his mother had died, right? That Geneva was dead. So having a woman who had died, it's kind of, and you have the fruit of their loins right in front of you, who now has he's literally an orphan, both of his actual parents, legal parents died. And then now he has a stepfather and then his stepmother died. I mean, this kid has been through the ringer. So it's kind of hard to hold anything against him or his mother. Jamie realizes just what is on the line for Willie. His mothers are both dead, and now his father, or his legal father, is possibly dying. Willie isn't afraid. He's sad. He's grieving. He'd wanted to stay with his father. Jamie finishes prepping the potion, and Claire had told him not to drink it. She's trying to warn him out of love. She's like, honey, maybe don't take any. There's some lavender in it. But lavender gave him less grief than it used to. He wonders if Willie will later have an association with lavender, and he guesses that depends on whether Lord John lives or dies. Jamie, someone who had lost both parents and one at a young age, understood what Willie was feeling. Willie isn't too sure about Claire being a healer. He said that he'd seen her do things to the man in the corn crib and he died anyway. They hadn't spoken of it, he and Claire, and now he was only really curious. And now he was really curious. What the heck had she done in there? He doesn't know. He says that Willie tells him that she'd had mud on her face and had sung a papist song in Latin, something to do with sacraments. Jamie tells Willie that the natives have a much harder time with measles than Europeans, and Claire had given her word to Willie that his papa would be all right. In an effort to distract Willie, he says they may have fish the next night, and Willie is excited by the notion of fishing. And then Jamie goes and opens his mouth about the fishing in the Lake District. He's like, Jamie is so excited, and he's like very like tapped down, right? He's tampered down. He's keeping a lid on it, but he can't let out these little tiny threads that connect him to his son. Willie speaks of his life in England, and he's like, yeah, it wasn't so hot. I mean, it was comfortable, but he was like, yeah, it was just tutors and dancing and yuck. He asks Jamie if he cares for music. Of course, Jamie says no. Because when Jamie can't hear, Jamie can't care about. Willie. No, it is Willie. I almost said Willoughby. Because before, in my notes, I use W for Willie now. And I just had a flashback of Willoughby. Oh, gosh. Okay. Willie says that Mrs. Fraser is very pretty. Little by little, the potion calms and puts Willie to sleep. And then, quote, the night is cold, my lord. Will you choose to lie next to me that we may share our coverings? Unquote. Aw. And Willie does. Quote, Willie fell asleep at once, nestled close against his side. Jamie lay awake for a long time, one arm laid lightly across the sleeping body of his son. Unquote. The next day, he's teaching him tricks, all the tricks he has for fishing. He's telling him about the use of flies and about the time of day, when the fish will come feed, etc. As Willie tries to use the rod, he chucks the whole thing in the water. That would be something I would do. I wouldn't fish, but I would totally throw the whole thing in the water. Like, I would be so excited. I would let go. He does better with the second rod, and Jamie stands behind him to help. Something very interesting, as if they didn't have enough similarities, we find out that Willie is left-handed too.
Cack-handed.
Oh my gosh.
Gag.
Yep. And Lord John, in respect, not just for Willie, but also because, I mean, dude's in love with Jamie. I mean, that's not ever going to change. Lord John had insisted that Willie be allowed to learn to write with his left hand, as well as fight with a sword with his left hand. So on Willie's third try with the rod, success. He catches a fish. They together catch a few more before dinner. And as they eat in front of the fire, Jamie has more of a chance to look at Willie. He has what he calls a still moment watching Willie. An image that printed itself on your mind or heart for the rest of your life in every detail. He has a number of them. Of his father, of Claire, Jenny, and Ian. And now Willie. And Diana does Diana. She engages all of the senses. The way this imprinted on Jamie, this image, this imprint that he has now of his son, it includes the feel of the cool wind, the smell and taste of the trout, the feel of his hair, the feel of the hair on his thighs, everything he sensed. And he says aloud, although he didn't know he was saying it aloud, Deo gratias. To prove he isn't tired, Willie rakes his hand through his hair. And Jamie, the way he does it and the way his hair stands up, Jamie is alarmed as he recognizes his very own gesture, which he was actually just about to do. He starts to prepare flies for the morning catch, and Willie scoots up next to him to help. He soon tires of this task and asks Jamie questions about hunting, fishing, the forest, and the natives. Willie shares that his grandmother said Scots breed like rabbits, although he didn't finish the sentence, but Jamie did finish it for him. And Jamie replies that yes, and many Scots or people in the Highlands have large families and they see children as blessings. Willie asks Jamie if he has lots of children. Jamie says no. His daughter, who is grown, lives in Boston. A fallen down feather, quote, A fallen down feather moved in a breath of wind, betraying its presence in the shadows. Jimmy pinched it between thumb and forefinger and lifted it gently from the ground. "No, I have a son, too. A bonny lad. And I love him weel, though he's away from home just now." Unquote. Lisa T. writes, "It is at this moment when we see how precious the time with Willie is. He will never meet Bree or Faith, and has only brief moments with the son whom he cannot acknowledge. It is heartbreaking, beautiful, and poignant. It reminds me of Jamie in Outlander after he has married Claire, but he can't tell her the main reason why he married her, which was for love. He wanted her from the moment he saw her, but he loved her when he comforted her in his arms at Leah. While not an exact parallel, when Willie is weeping, Jamie finds a small way to be his father." This chapter is so reflective of Jamie and the course of his life. So much love, honor, secrets, and quiet heartbreak. Join us next time when we discuss chapter 28, Heated Conversation, and chapter 29, Charnel Houses. Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.